Chris Walla is the guitarist and producer for Death Cab for Cutie, the very successful band from Seattle that will release their new album Narrow Stairs in April. Chris has his own solo album, Field Manual, finally out. It's his first since an earlier effort, Martin Youth Auxiliary, and it's been often delayed. The files for it were even seized by Homeland Security at a border crossing for inspection at one point. I asked Chris about the length of time this project took to happen.
Yeah, it did seem to take a long time. This was like the fourth attempt, I think, that I made to actually make a solo record. And I don't know really what happened the first three times, but the fourth time, it seemed mandatory somehow that I finish it.
Did you try to produce yourself the rest of the times?
Yes. And I mean, part of what has happened in previous attempts has been that I can get about three songs into something by myself on, you know, running on inspiration and adrenaline. And then, you know, it gets to about the fourth song and the fifth song, and I start to float away a little bit. And then songs 6 through 10 or 12 end up being just sort of concepts that never even get out of my head.
Wow.
Like with this record, I had a lot of this stuff sort of in the... I mean, it had been in the hopper, and I was really like where it was starting to go, but when I started to actually really dig into it to finish it, it seemed like it was never going to get done unless I brought somebody else in.
And that's Warren Livesey.
Warren Livesey, yes.
I want to talk a little bit more about the producer-artist relationship, because I'm sure you've seen it from all sides now. But one of the things I was really... I like to listen to albums before I read anything about them. And I picked up on a lot of the political content, but I kept saying to myself, well, maybe he's not talking about politics. Maybe it is a personal relationship that these things, you know, relate to. And right off the bat, 250 seems to have certainly political elements to it. Is there a bit of the personal political, or are they separate in your mind?
They're all tied together, and it's hard to explain to people who. Well, it's kind of hard. It's been hard for me to explain to anybody, really. Like I'm so hung up on this idea that you are a product of your times and the people you're with and your town and the place where you're from and all of your experiences. And it seems that more and more, I don't know, it seems, maybe it's just because I'm not 22 anymore. Mm. Like maybe it's hard to tell exactly what it is, but I feel like they're really tied together for me in a way that they've never been. And when I sing about something, when I sing about something political, it ends up having a lot of myself in it, or vice versa. If I'm singing about something personal, I'm trying to relate it to whatever I'm hearing or seeing by way of headlines or whatever. I don't know. It's been difficult for me to actually like map out for people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of the songs have really specific stories.
Should we get specific about 250?
We can get specific about 250. Yeah. 250 is... It's largely imagined, but it's my dad was a Boeing man, and he worked for Boeing for 32 years. And when sort of his feeling about the glory years of Boeing and when he was sort of feeling the best about it was when Alan Mulally was running commercial at Boeing. And Alan ended up at Ford a few years ago. And that's basically, I mean, 250 is sort of a, it's a bunch of things. Like it's NAFTA, it's us shipping jobs overseas. It's like, why don't I feel like I can, why don't I feel like there's an American car that I want to buy? Like there's a lot of talk about, you know, Ford being the progressive, you know, sort of company that it feels like it should be, but like in terms of product and how they're presenting themselves to the market, it doesn't feel that way. So that's sort of where, that's what 250 is about.
250 is the song that begins Chris Wallace's new Field Manual, and a great song. And I'm glad you explained that, because that's where I thought it was about. And it's interesting, coming from Seattle, there's so many things associated with Seattle, and in many people's ideas, the aerospace industry is almost old school Seattle.
Yeah, right. Well, it feels old school now that it seems like only in Washington State could we figure out how to not give our biggest industry enough incentive to actually stay in Washington. So, you know, like headquarters for Boeing are now in Illinois, which is like, whatever. It is what it is.
Wow. we mentioned earlier that Warren Livesey helped you produce this album. And you've done so much work with other people as a producer, work with your own band as a producer. I'm sure you've thought a lot about the interpersonal aspects of producing or just been dealing with it. And to me, that's the most fascinating thing, to work with artists and to have to communicate with them.
Right.
Could you sort of contrast your style with his, and what do you take? What did you as an artist take from him? Did you take anything from him that would be helpful for you as a producer?
I took a ton from Warren as a producer. I mean, like, I've recorded myself for years. Like, I've sat behind a drum set and, like, you know, run the transport, and I've been behind a microphone and run the transport, and, like, pretty much everything to some degree or another. But I've never had the experience of really letting someone else direct the process and, like, give me feedback and ask for specific things and really drive the project. And I've also never done anything like that where I wasn't the engineer and I wasn't in control of the sounds. And I think especially as a singer and then as a drummer, though none of the drums that I recorded, except for 250, none of the drums I recorded actually made the record. But it was really helpful to me, I think, as a producer, to get the experience of knowing what it's like to have somebody asking for the 30th pass of something or the 60th pass of something, particularly as a singer. Like, I mean, just like understanding the physical limitations of my throat and my mouth and my head, and how that all, like, ties together with my brain is really, I feel a lot more compassion, I think, for singers than I did at some point. I think I have a tendency to treat people as machines sometimes. Like, there was one point during the Crane Wife with the Decemberists where I was really after Colin to get something really specific, and, like, I just wasn't hearing it. And, I mean, the thing that we ended up with was awesome, but I was guilty of sending him to a really uncomfortable place before we got there. And now that I've had the experience of making this record, like, I mean, I felt bad about it at the time, but, like, I feel really bad about it now.
Interesting. So do you remember what the place in Crane Wife was?
You know, I probably shouldn't say.
Oh, okay.
We should probably
okay.
just leave it off the record.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Chris Walla is our guest today, and we are talking about the work he has done in the past with people like the Decemberists we just heard about, Not a Surf, Tegan and Sarah. Is there a common denominator among the bands that interest you, do you think, that you want to work with?
I think that it is songs I like and people I like. That's pretty much all it is. That's all it comes down to.
Yep.
Yeah, I can't imagine working on songs I didn't like, and I can't imagine working with people I didn't like, even if I loved the songs. They kind of both have to be there.
Well, I wanted to play some more from the new album. Why did you call it Field Manual?
It actually has a lot to do with where the graphic design for the record came from. The fellow who did this for me is a fellow named Tony Sekolo, and he's done some really great stuff. He's a Portland guy, and he and I are both really interested in sort of 50s, mid-century, sort of dawn of the modern age, two-color, three-color screen print kind of stuff. And one of the things that we were looking through over and over that was really interesting to us was he has this stack of Army Field Manuals, and there was one particular that he pulled out that had this particular thing about it that was really pleasing visually, But the content of the thing was essentially, it's essentially how to be a successful insurgent in Iraq right now. And it's a Korean War era document, and it's all about like how to build plastic explosives and put them in and like in an iron or a bed or, you know, just really like devastating, horrible stuff. And it just really shocked me that that was still so readily available and something that, you know, I mean, not to say that maybe that's something that gets buried by the government, but it was really surprising that that was something in like living history for so many people that was, you know, that that's like really, really a part of where we're from. So I don't know. And as I that just stuck with me, like, you know, doing eBay searches and like Amazon searches and finding out that these are 10, 15, 20 deep, like that particular title. And just thinking about all of these songs and how they are sort of, I mean, so many of them are like personal notes to myself about like, it's a little sort of instruction manual. It's just like trying to remind myself to say what I mean and mean what I say and just trying to keep things positive. So it sort of turned into my own little field manual. And I mean, my hope is that first and foremost, it's a pop record. But like if, you know, if you want to dig deeper than that, I hope there's something there.
Definitely. Well, it's not only a pop record, but a varied pop record. We heard 250, which is one kind of sound. And I wanted to play Everyone Needs a Home, which feels different to me. What is this one? Give us the subtext if we were to want to dig deeper into this.
Mm-hmm. Well, Everyone Needs a Home is basically started with the fact that we are, you know, 2+ years on now from Hurricane Katrina, and it doesn't really feel as though we've gotten it all straightened out yet. And like there's still people living in hotel rooms, you know, hundreds of miles from where they were. And I certainly won't claim to know anything more about that situation than any of the rest of us who haven't been there know. But the handling of that experience to me is one of those things that I can't comprehend that we haven't been able to agree as a nation that we should take care of one another, at least on that level. It was really frustrating to me, like getting further and further away from Katrina and still seeing pictures from the Lower Ninth Ward and still hearing about just all these stories about how it doesn't, I mean, it's like parts of it are coming together, but parts of it are coming together because like real estate barons are moving in and buying up the poorest parts of that city. So I don't know. That's what that song's about.
Everyone needs a home. Everybody needs a place to go. Sympathetic ears, you're on hold. Oh, every girl needs a roof and a bed and a bright, bright light. She can turn off at night. Fall asleep with the love of her life. Oh.
Everyone Needs a Home, another one from Chris Wallace, Field Manual, the new album. And Chris is with us today, and it's interesting. The timing of getting this out versus the timing of the new Death Cab album was probably not what you planned.
It's not what I would choose. I don't think it's what anybody would have chosen, but sometimes you don't get to choose things.
Right. Well, and also because of the time frame of how this you wrote this and how it got out. Probably got away from you in that way as well.
Definitely.
Were you ever working simultaneously on both records?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, there was a whole, there was about a month, like the first month of tracking the Death Cab record and then the last month of revisions for Field Manual all got stacked up together. Which was just a nightmare. It's hard enough when it's two records by bands that I'm not really related to that get sort of overlapped. And I hate that. I just hate that feeling of like something's not finished and I'm starting on something else. And it's one thing if like, you know, if I'm doing like mixes piecemeal for people, like that's, you know, if that stuff overlaps, that's fine. But like when it's whole albums that I'm, you know, in charge of sort of soup to nuts and they're just, they're smashed into one another, I start to go totally crazy.
Yeah, I would think it would be hard to compartmentalize that.
It's so uncomfortable.
Yeah. When did you decide you wanted to be a musician? What led you to doing that? How old were you when you figured it out?
I don't know that I ever really decided I wanted to be a musician. I I always used to play with the balance control and the stereo when I was growing up, which is, you know.
Were you a fan of more bass or more treble? Because that's all there was, right?
Oh, I never played with the tone controls. Those were off limits.
Oh, okay. So it was just
balance.
Left, right.
That was it. I could have played with the bass and treble controls, but that wasn't interesting to me. It was all about balance. It was all about, the one that I remember from when I was really little is, you know, me, stereo, headphones, Sgt. Pepper, Good Morning, Good Morning. And like on that side, I think, I can't remember exactly, but I think it's all horns and drums. And on the other side, it's John and, you know, I forget exactly how it works. But I remember, and I also remember, when my parents got married, they of course both had that record. And my dad's was the mono copy and my mom's is a stereo copy. So I learned the difference pretty quick. I didn't like dad's copy because left, right, same difference. So I don't... It wasn't particularly musical growing up, aside from the record collection, but it's weird. Like I played the violin when I was in the fourth grade, and I broke a violin bow, and that didn't go so well. And then I wanted to play the saxophone, and my parents bought me a piano, and that was kind of, I had a really weird piano lesson experience for, 5 years until my piano teacher finally fired me. And then I started playing the bass guitar, which I really still think of as my first and only like instrument in competent terms. I don't know. I have such a funny relationship with music.
Well, I wanted to play another one from this, and I wanted to make it your choice because we've kind of been concentrating on things that have political subtext to it. And I thought maybe we would... So I'm interested in doing the score. I love Sing Again, too. We have time for one more. Which would you...
I would say Sing Again, probably. Think it's... Yeah, I mean, it's the oldest... It's kind of the... I don't know. I guess they're all kind of wingnuts on the record, but that one is, it's definitely the oldest song on the record, and it's something that, I don't know, I really like how it came out.
All right. So this is Sing Again from Chris Wilder's Field Manual.
If we still can.
We're listening to the tunes from Chris Wallace's Field Manual, his solo album. Now, how does this differ? Well, obviously, because it's totally produced, but from the Martin Youth Auxiliary things that you did in the past.
I think that it differs mostly in. I think it differs mostly just in confidence and clarity.
Mm.
Like the whole idea of when I started like writing songs and making music for myself, when I moved to Bellingham from Seattle, it was about the time that I'd met Ben. It was about the time the thing that became Death Cab for Cutie started. And we all, like Ben and myself and all of our friends all had, were in bands with really verbose names. Like there was the Revolutionary Hydra and Magnetic Bicycle Craft and Giancarlo's Reaction and Death Cab for Cutie and like all just huge multiple ridiculous words all stacked together. And Martin Youth Auxiliary was the one that I chose for myself. And it was sort of like many of those were solo projects or side projects for the people involved, and like that, Martin Youth Auxiliary was me exactly as much, probably more so, because I'm the only one actually who played on that cassette than this record is. But it was sort of because I didn't feel like I knew exactly what I was doing, it was kind of a scrim to hide behind. Like, you know, I want to make this, but I don't want anyone to like know who I am, which seems so counterintuitive. But yeah, and then with this record, this is just if there's one thing I wanted to get straight on this record, it was the writing. I wanted to make sure that every word that came out of my mouth was something that I could really stand behind and that I really felt good about. And I feel great about that. Like, I feel like I nailed that part. So it was feeling disingenuous to me to call it some other thing. It just felt like I should own it, and it should be the name that I go by day to day.
Well, the other aspect is, if you really like these songs and really wanted to play them live, you really don't have a window to go out to do a live tour, because we're about 3 weeks away from the Death Camp
That's
tour
true.
Starting.
Yeah.
Is that something you would put off, or would that interest you?
I really want to get out and play these songs at some point. I hope there's a point at some time this year that I'll be able to get out and do a few shows. It's also not something I've ever really done. I mean, I absolutely freak out when I get in front of an audience with a guitar. It's terrifying. It's like weeks of sort of self-torture before I like get on a little stage in a little venue and like just play songs for my friends. I don't know what it is. It's a completely different thing from getting on stage with a band, especially a band in which I'm not the singer. Like it's just like every time that this whole record is just it's a whole learning experience, and it's given me a whole new appreciation for so many different things, and like being the front man in a band is one of them. Like, it's something that, like, I'm going to try it out, but it's not what I do. And I think I know why I don't do it more often.
Would you ever have a conversation with Ben about that, about Death Cab, or have you ever?
Well, I haven't talked with him very much about it. I have talked with him more about, like, the whole singer aspect, and like we approach the vocals really differently on the new Death Cab record. Like, it's definitely some of the stuff that I learned from Warren working on this record is stuff that got applied to the new Death Cab record and will be applied to everything I work on from here forward. So,
well, that makes us look forward even more to Narrow Stairs. And in the meantime, we can spend time with Field Manual and hear how you sing. Chris Walla, our guest, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thanks for having me.
Chris Walla, our guest, and we'll be back in a moment here on the World Cafe.